Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thursday, it's May 19th, 10 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard, and I'm so pleased that today, and usually it happens on Thursdays, we speak to Brian Harrod. He's a Yonkers Newswire publisher and editor. So good morning, Mr. Harrod. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Hezzy. And yourself?
Thank God, okay. I've got no complaints. I feel better knowing that I'm going to be able to speak to you today. There's so much to cover, and you came up with a big list of very, very interesting things. I guess the most striking was the fact that we're talking about the reapportionment of districts, a realignment of districts. What the hell is going on here, and why did we have to change them? Because now we're having people that used to be in separate districts now fighting each other for prominence. And I don't know if anybody knows these people, because it's like changing all these demarcation lines of districts, assembly and Senate. I don't know how we're going to accomplish this. It looks like it's a slugfest that we've set up.
Yes.
Is this going to work?
I think so. I think it's for the good. I know a lot of people are very partisan, have a Republican view or a Democratic view. But, you know, previously when they did this, the Republicans were gerrymandering the districts, and now this time around, you know, the Democrats were in charge, and Andrea Stewart-Cousins figured, you know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander, and she started creating her own little districts there when the commission couldn't come together and come up with one plan. But this actually going to a judge and sending it over to an expert in another state to line this out is, I think it's overall good for the for politics in New York in general, to consolidate these districts. To have a district that starts in Long Island, takes a bit of piece of Queens, takes a bit of a piece of the Bronx, and it comes up the Sound Shore, you know, taking places like Rye, Harrison, Mamaroneck, Pelham, like that. It's just ludicrous. So it's a good thing. But in reapportioning this, it's, you know, you got two progressives going head-to-head, because now Mahdieh Jones is in Jamal Bowman's district, the Yonkers congressman's district. And then his district is that Sean Patrick, Maloney, I guess, up there.
Maloney.
Yeah. And he's, you know, that's his base, too, in Putnam County. He lives in Putnam County. So, you know, Mahdieh's like, do I want to go against Jamal, or do I want to, you know, defend my district up there? And neither aspect looks good for him. You know, it's going to be a tough race either way.
Well, that's the whole thing, though. What did we try to accomplish, and have we accomplished anything? Because, like, for example, there is a big difference, or I'm impressed with a big difference, but I don't know Mr. Bowman all that well, and I don't know who was the other gentleman? Mahdieh Jones, forgive me.
Yeah.
So I don't know him well either. But they seem to be different people, and I don't know if their politics are any different. So how do we decide which one is better? And do the voters already know? Do the voters have a propensity to move in one direction or another? So what have we accomplished, though? That's what I don't understand exactly.
Well, I think
how did we decide?
Having districts that relate to how people actually live and vote, that it's not like Mr. Latimer's old district that Kelly Mayer has now. It made a snake all the way up from Bedford down to the Sound Shore, up through, you know, the north part of Yonkers, you know what I'm saying? And
right.
It was, I think, touching on every other community around. It covered a third of the West communities in Westchester, making this little thing trying to get rid of him when they were trying to, you know, changing things. But I think having that kind of thing, these gerrymandered districts, is not in the best interest of people. So even though it's going to put some progressive Democrats head-to-head against each other, incumbents. Two incumbents have to battle it out. They're just going to have to make the best case, because overall, this judge is ruling. This is a Republican judge, and the appellate department had agreed with him. You know, it wasn't right. It wasn't just. It wasn't fair to have these gerrymandered districts trying to protect people or to get rid of people. And
that's the point. But the point is though. Were the districts gerrymandered with a bias, and do people recognize that?
People read and talk about it, but in our day and age, you know, oh, gerrymandering is bad, but that's the way they do things. You know, it's how things operate is what they'll say, and people are very partisan now. You know, I'm more inclined to agree with more progressive positions over time. I used to be much more conservative and have moved to more progressive positions as I've gotten older.
Okay.
But even though this was a Republican lawsuit against this, it was right. It was just. You know, I like in Yonkers where you have Nader's assembly district really covering Yonkers. You know what I'm saying? He's accountable to these people. I wouldn't like Nader to be, you know, part of Yonkers, part of Bronxville, going over and touching on Pelham and a little piece of New Rochelle, you know what I'm saying, just to get areas that would supposedly be good for him. And it's very hard for somebody to run in that type of thing. It's very hard for somebody to run against Andrea Stewart Cousins if you got to be everything from Scarsdale to White Plains to New Rochelle to Yonkers and everything in between Greenberg, you know what I'm saying. You got to be in – it's almost impossible. One, she's an incumbent. Two – you know, you have to launch campaigns in all these communities.
Well, Andrea Stewart Cousins is a majority leader in the Senate and New York State Senate, and she seems to have gotten a much broader base, and it's almost all of Yonkers. It's a very, very small sliver
that
was saved.
Yeah.
So, but for Shelley Mayer, but that's about it. So I think it makes more sense to me that somebody represents all of Yonkers. It is the third largest city in the country, in the state, rather. So it doesn't make sense to connect it with, I don't know, with Bronxville or Mount Vernon. It's not quite the same. Different demeanor, different attitude, different socioeconomic positions. Certainly Bronxville is completely different than Mount Vernon, and we have similarities with Mount Vernon, but not everything in Yonkers.
Yes.
So it makes sense. Well,
I
think Nader proved that. Nader proved that as the assemblyman, because he represents, I think, 85% of Yonkers.
Yes.
And the other 15% is with Gary Pretlow, who represents Mount Vernon.
With Nader's district being that way, he is very focused on what constituents in Yonkers want, need, and care about. But if he was had to be in like 8 different towns snaking through the southern part of Westchester, you know, he would be trying to keep all these different communities, and they might have competing interests, you know. Affordable housing might be a big interest in Yonkers, but it might not be as big of an interest, say, in Bronxville. You know what I'm saying? They probably wouldn't have much affordable housing. So I think this idea where Mr. Bowman's district now is kind of like the lower Westchester, and then there's a northern Westchester, and then there's a Putnam and slightly above that district, is three, boom, boom, boom. It's easy to figure out even who your congressman is. Some people, it's very difficult. You go ask them, who's your congressman, or who's your – they might not know with the way these things are snaking around. But or you could have a community assembly people.
But that's a question. Someone like a Bowman, for example, he represents the Bronx. He represents parts of Yonkers. He represents other places. Is it conceivable that he can represent from the Bronx all the way up into Putnam? Does that make sense? Aren't they different communities?
He'll stop about 287. He's lower Westchester and part of the Bronx.
Uh-huh.
So and then from about 287 north in the, in the
I believe Trump Mahoney
it might be Cold Spring he's in, so he's in a Putnam County resident, so but Maud Air is
I believe,
in White Plains.
Yeah, but that's the whole thing. I don't understand exactly where Mondaire Jones' sensitivity and sensibility in representing that district seems to be completely different from the type of demeanor that is in the lower part of the county as well as in the Bronx.
Well, his district previously, I think, was, and I'll get this wrong, I think it was like Rockland County, and it crossed over the river, like maybe some of those river towns hit White Plains and then crossed over through some other stuff and ended up in Rye Brook, you know what I'm saying? So it was, they were very liberal places, and it was the parts of Rockland County he got were more liberal than others, but it helped him get elected for that district. But, you know, it just, the people that, you know, the people in, say, Rye Brook, and the people in Rockland County, and the people, say, in Tarrytown might have different needs and different wants. And it'd be very hard to even figure out who is the congressman there. But now making it one cohesive, you know, like northern Westchester kind of thing, and not crossing over into Rockland County, is a wiser and better thing, in my opinion. And the same with lower Westchester. Having two or three different congressmen splitting up all these different communities is just silly at best. But it was just the nature of politics. I think this is overall making these understandable districts are going to be an improvement.
Well, you know, I'm still wondering, do you understand? Because I don't fully understand exactly how they redefined the districts. And what was the basis for it? Was
The population, the census was the issue. The, New York lost population, so they lost a congressional seat. So they had to redraw the boundaries. One seat was going to go no matter what. So then there was a chance to carve up the area. So you had the Republicans trying to carve it up on this independent commission and the Democrats. It was even. They couldn't come to an agreement, so it was thrown to Andrea Stewart Cousins and the Assembly. They said, we're large and in charge, and pushed it through. And especially the Senate seats, which were very valuable, and congressional seats, were really the Republicans felt they were shortchanged. And they went to court. And so it had to, it's basically pushing some seats up north a little bit. You know, there's basically a seat taken out of the north, a congressional seat, and it's pushing all this this land going forward. So it's just, what can you do? That Mr. Harkham, it's up there. His over time, his district, he's not in this, but a long time ago, that district used to be down in Yonkers, and it slowly worked its way up. Now it's up in Putnam County. Mm-hmm. Just the nature of the population shifts over the decades that have required the changes. But this time, because the judge
You keep talking about the population shift. What was the population shift? Is it people? Is it dogma?
Yes.
I don't get it. I really don't understand it. Because I don't understand what they decided to go with. Did they go with because you were a Republican or a Democrat?
There's 500 some seats in. I got you. I'll explain here, Hezzy. There's 500 some seats in Congress, and they're divided up over the U.S. population. New York lost people over time. You know how people say people are moving out of New York.
I know that. Okay.
So New York lost people.
How did they redefine it?
Well, that you
keep talking about their redefining it, but you don't explain how it was redefined, by what
basis.
Well,
with the congressional representative seats, it's based on population.
Uh-huh.
So everybody gets two senators, but the representatives is based on the population of that state. Since we lost population and other states gained population, other states got a congressional person.
If you had 125 people in a district and the population has dwindled, and now you've only got 100, how do you decide which 100 you're keeping and why are you keeping them? How do you define it? And that's what I'm questioning. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. I just don't understand the manner by which they decided we're going to take this particular district and this is what we're going to do with it because they have 100,000 people who live in this area, and that's what, and that's where. So let's say you have a 1,000 places, and you got to redo everything because you've lost 4 seats in government. So everything has to change, and now you realign the whole thing, and you allocate a certain number to every district so it's equal by population. But then,
is it just population, or is it
politics? Is it Democrat? Is it Republican? What is it?
They're striving for the districts to have the same number of people, so that there's a equitable representation. So, someone that's like
people.
Say in like Brooklyn might need a couple
of people.
Is it just
people, or is it something else? Look,
it's
you
people,
keep going, Hesley. But the point
Hesley,
is,
it's people.
What is it?
In a very dense place, say like Brooklyn, you'll have multiple congressmen, but in a place like northern upstate New York, one congressman might cover vast amounts of territory. It's based on the number of people. They try to have the districts the same number of people.
So it's just population.
But since you, yeah,
so
but
are
since
you
you're
suggesting
cross population,
it's just population? Is that it? It's the only population is the only
population
reason?
Population demands it,
because
yes. That's what's going to choose who the congress people are, yes.
Okay, so what we're basically learning, what we're learning is that the way they apportioned the districts in the past leaned one way or the other, and it leaned predominantly on the Democratic side because the Democrats were in control, and that's what we found was really wrong.
Well, in the, 'cause
the numbers
previous
were
time,
correct
the Republicans
for the district.
Were previous in the previous. Previously when this happened, this happens every 10 years when we do the census. So previously when this happened in New York, the Republicans were large and in charge, and they got the gerrymandering.
Okay.
This time around, the Democrats said, well, okay, we'll do the same thing. You know, and they did try to make put up like a smokescreen of an independent commission. But this time around, the Republicans went to court. You know, even though we might have done the same thing in the past, this is not right now. And so they went to court, and they got a judge, a Republican judge, to agree with them. But the appellate division, the highest court in New York State, agreed with the Republican judge. This is not fair. This is not just. This is not right. And so the job was given to
please,
an independent person.
You know, let's get to the issue instead of spending a half an hour going around in circles. And I mean this with all due respect. I think that for the first time in the last 20 minutes, that's the answer. So the answer is that there was – the gerrymandering meant that there was a bias one way or the other. And before, it may have been Republican. It could have been Democrat. And this time we found out that the way they wanted to redefine the districts, it was inappropriate. And now they decided that it was correct. So it's correct – only based on population?
Yeah, and I think they were trying to get contiguous areas, not to have it, be some
We understand
umbrella
a contiguous thing. You know, look, we didn't split from going from one place and drop a city along the way and then move over to another city somewhere else and connected the two. They had to be contiguous.
Yeah.
That was I think that's the standard. Because
that's kind of the argument the Republicans said. These weren't fair or just because they were odd-shaped instead of just being in little, places that were just basically
well, I do remember,
defined.
I do remember we had some weird districts in Yonkers in the past.
Yes.
It went crazy.
Well, even Tasha's now, even locally, we have that problem. Tasha's has a very odd district. That district, what is that? 3, I think it is. You know, it goes.
Yes,
district
3. You know when it went crazy under Dennis Robertson when he was there. They redefined it, I think, for him, and it's never changed that I remember. Yeah. I just never noticed if it did or didn't change. But that was a crazy, crazy district. It was like a little sliver in the middle of nowhere, and he didn't represent it very well then at that time. I don't know if Tasha's doing such a great job with it, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah.
People vote whoever they want as their representative.
I mean,
that's
over
their
time, though, hopefully Yonkers will get some more intelligent districts, too. It makes it very easy. You have a lot of neighborhoods in Yonkers, and maybe these neighborhoods on this side of town, these neighborhoods on that side of town, and up here in these neighborhoods and those. I think it would be wise to have more intelligent districts. You shouldn't have a thing where you don't even know where you're supposed to vote or who you're voting for.
But, again, I'm still asking the same question because I still don't believe I've understood the answer because I don't understand it. It's not like I'm hiding an answer from you.
No.
I don't understand the basis by which they drew these districts. Is it simply by population or are they trying to balance the population between Democrats and Republicans and between, let's say, by ethnicities, by color, by what? What is it and how do they define a district?
Well,
how do they define the cohesiveness of a district to be represented by one individual who is elected to office to represent all of them?
I think both answers are
in the assembly, the point is he represents all of Yonkers. I think it's a little bit easier to represent all of Yonkers.
I agree.
85% of Yonkers. I think it's very hard to represent Mount Vernon, which is 80,000 people, and another 15% out of Yonkers, which brings it up to about equal number of population-wise.
I think the answer is both of the issues you brought up. Yes, it should be by population, and they should make sense. They should be contiguous. But unfortunately, politics comes into play, and there's biases. So, like when George Latimer's Senate district was there, and they were trying to get rid of him, they had a chance when they redrew the thing. So, maybe George Latimer wasn't as popular in northern part of Yonkers or in Bronxville. There was maybe more conservative areas. And so they put that on his district and took away some Democratic thing. It didn't work for them. It was a very close race, but that was the bias in there that people would argue. And then this time around, I believe, what's her name? Miss Biagi. They created
Biagi.
A district for her, like Pelham going up the – she's very strong in Pelham going up the Sound Shore. And then they gave a little slither of the Bronx, a little slither of Queens, and a little slither of Long Island that no one in those areas would be able to overcome her areas up in here. So, that's the district they kind of got rid of. That District 3 they redid, and it was just ludicrous. And that shoved everything up. And when it shoved everything up, Jamal Bowman all of a sudden was going head-to-head with Mahdare Jones, or Mahdare
Jones
had to move up into where his district is now and take on Sean Patrick Maloney. And it's very – no incumbent wants to run against another incumbent. You want some guy that never held office, you know what I'm saying? And and they're Dems, so you got incumbent Dems going after each other. And no one's in the Democratic Party. Nobody's happy about it. But it's overall, it's a good thing because we've got a more just system of electing people. We've got more just districts.
Well, that's the question which it still escapes my intellect. So assuming I have any, I just don't understand exactly how they balance it out, how they define a district, and what are they massaging the population to have a demeanor one way or the other? Why are we getting people like a Bowman slugging it out with a Mahdare Jones? They're both evidently quite eloquent in their districts. They seem to be different people to me, very different. Demeanor, outlook, education, all kinds of things going on here. I don't know if they're even about the same age. I think that Mahdare Jones is younger. But it doesn't matter. you know, I don't understand what we balanced here.
That's, I think, Mondaire's problem.
Not
was
that I understood
that
before.
As the upstate lost a congressman, it pushed all the districts up. So he was in the lower part of his district, White Plains.
I understand
that. And his district
got
pushed up that. So he has a choice, basically.
I know, but you keep saying it got pushed, but how did it get pushed? Did it simply get pushed by moving the district 10 blocks further up, or 10 blocks further south, or 10 blocks further east?
Around Watertown, there was a congressman. And then the Watertown in that area in northern and upstate New York lost people. So since it lost people, they lost that congressman. So there's a void there. So it pushed the population's been – Yonkers has been growing population. We went from the fourth to the third largest
city. We went up by
10,000
people.
Yeah, and then, so – and we
let's
made
not, – let's not blow it out of proportion.
Okay,
10,000 people, that's it.
And then Westchester's increased in population, and the Bronx has increased, and we've been having population increases in the New York metropolitan area. So there's more people here, less people up there. So that just made the shift. When the shift happened, that put Mondaire Jones between a rock and a hard place. Do I want to go against Sean, or do I want to go against Jamal? They both have very strong bases in those two areas. And he has to choose. And right now, I think the last thing I saw was he was trying to get Jamal Bowman, or getting Jamal Bowman to say Sean should go up to a district higher and leave that district to Mondaire. But Sean thinks that's the dumbest idea he ever heard, because that's where I live, and that's where my base is. So
wait a minute. So you mean there's still a possibility of massaging the districts? It's not now finalized?
It's pretty much been released, and then the court has to approve it, but they're going to approve it, and it's done. So it's pretty much a done deal. And it just created a little bit of a problem between people who are running. You know, things change. You know, every 10 years, things change. It's not like they didn't know what it was going to do. They just thought that they were going to be able to change to their liking. And the Republicans said,
That's the point. But that's the point. Are the incumbents, do they have the power within their parties to just simply say, hey, I'm the incumbent, I expect you to endorse my candidacy and to maintain my prominence in my district, because that's who I represent?
For decades,
so
that was kind of like
works.
The philosophy in New York for decades was, you know what, the party in charge is going to draw the lines. But this time around, a group of Republicans got together and said, this is BS. The Constitution says it needs to be fair, just, and equitable. And they went to a judge, made their best case. The Democrats had a chance to make their case, and it failed. They went to the appeals court.
You said that maybe 20 times, but how was it unfair is what I don't understand. Even though it probably was unfair, because the way people in power usually conduct their business is they say, I'm in power, I don't care what you think, because I've got the power to do whatever I want. So quite often people in power are dismissive of others. Why is beyond me, but whatever, maybe they can't take the challenge. So how did we redefine it? Do you fully understand why? You're telling me the mechanisms. I understand the mechanisms, but I don't understand how we redefined it and what was the basis for it.
The basis, I'm getting lost around here myself. I would say this, Hezzy. I believe Mondaire Jones, I'm going to try to get my history right. I believe Nita Lowy had Mondaire Jones's district.
Yes, she did.
And over time,
He succeeded her.
Yeah, over time, the Republicans tried to get rid of her, and they had some crazy district, like I said, going from Rye Brook to White Plains to the river towns over into Rockland County, some little through there, you know. And maybe the Jews in Rockland County are a lot more conservative than the Jews in Rye Brook, you know what I'm saying? Maybe the people in Tarrytown have different issues and worries than the people in White Plains. It really was a horrible district that they put together, and it was really set up that way to try to get rid of her, but she overcame it. Now, he came in, he had her support.
She was able to respond to all the entire district.
And then he was there. He was there, and he's in that district. But the Republicans said, even though we've done this in the past, it doesn't conform to the New York State Constitution, that these districts need to be fair and just. And those aren't, they made the argument this is not fair and just. And so when they made that argument, they were successful.
Please stop. What was unfair and unjust? That's what I don't understand. I don't understand that. That's the only issue I have.
If you live
I'm
in
not
Larchmont.
Even quibbling with.
If you live in Larchmont, and your congressperson could be from the Bronx, Queens, or Long Island for a little piece. So supposedly somebody could win in Long Island. The person in Long Island is not going to give two shits about what the person in Larchmont needs because they created this 100%. District for Mrs. Biagi. So that's fair. That's unfair and unjust. It's called gerrymandering. That's the courts are ruling that that's illegal under New York State Constitution. So now, even though it may benefit the Republicans upstate a little bit, that where they were trying to carve out the seat so it wouldn't be a Republican seat that got lost as opposed to a Democratic seat.
So have they redrawn the line so that they are contiguous
across the whole state.
And they don't go from one – do they go from one area to the next?
Exactly. They go from Long Island through New York City through the Hudson Valley all the way upstate New York to Buffalo.
That's where I don't get it. That's what I'm saying. You know, I can understand if you're going to do Yonkers and you're going to connect it even with Mount Vernon.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
I can see that it's not the end of the world. I don't have a problem if you connect Yonkers with something north of it. With Dobbs Ferry or even Greenberg. Again, there are similarities, and maybe Nita Lowey was able to manage it. I guess you really have to know your district very well to be able to be something.
This way. The district has to be, the district has to be about let's say close to 750,000 people in each of these districts.
Okay.
So
we know the numbers.
Now you can make a district so that it's like Lower Westchester and Upper Westchester and part of Putnam, or you can go and make a district that is like Rybrook, Portchester, Wrightown, Harrison, Mamaroneck, Larchmont, go around New Rochelle, part of some of these neighborhoods in the Bronx, and then Mephisa Pelham, and part of this neighborhood in Queens, a couple neighborhoods in Queens, a couple neighborhoods in Long Island. And you'll get your 650 people, but that won't be as fair as if you just had Lower Westchester from 287 and a little piece of the Bronx. So that's where the Republicans won the lawsuit, that these when you make these districts of 650,000 people or so, or 750,000 people or so, you have to make sure that they make sense. They just can't be coming from Muncie to Rye Brook in a little snake-like thing to
benefit. Well, I think I'm getting it. Now it makes a little bit more sense to me. So you have 650,000 people in a district, and I guess it's conceivable that it's all contiguous because it should all be connected, but we're also still coming up with some weird connections, aren't we?
That's the problem, the weird connections.
So it's still gerrymandered, even though we think it's better than it was before, which it probably is, but it's still not the way it can be. So is it conceivable that, let's say, you got a city of 300,000, like which is Yonkers, and you got another 80,000 or 100,000 in Mount Vernon, you tie them up together, and you've already got, almost 400,000 people, so you need another 250,000 more.
And the areas in between to make the district.
So
in other words,
we have something like that?
Well, previously, this district
that
Jamal Bowman had was part of the Bronx, going up Yonkers, Mount Vernon, part of New Rochelle, part of Bronxville, I think, and in the Larchmont, a piece of Mamaroneck, then skipping around Harrison, I guess that was Nita Lowey's area, you know what I'm saying, and grabbing part of Portchester. Nita Lowey was kind of dipping down to the Rye Neck portion of Mamaroneck, going up into Rye City, Rye Brook, I don't, you know, like that kind of thing, and Harrison, I believe, and then and then going around part of White Plains. So they each got a little piece of White Plains, and it was just crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So they just said that's the gerrymandering. That's setting up districts to benefit a person. Now it's set up to represent an area, and hopefully that'll be more of a majority rule.
That's a very salient point.
Rules.
So you're suggesting that before, and that was the ruling of the court, that before we apportioned a district based on whoever was the incumbent or the power, the political party in charge, and now that it's based literally on populations that are contiguous with one another, we really don't know who will win necessarily in advance, whereas in the past we may have had some inclination to, oh, well, this is really a Democratic area and the Democrats will win, or this is a Republican area, the Republicans will win. And then there was some, cross ventilation here for some cases where you could have got more people beyond the party line.
I think, so my dear,
do you think based on what you know that it looks more credible now than before?
Yes. Let me put it this way. If I was even though I may agree with more liberal policies and conservative policies, I'm considering myself a little bit left of moderate, perhaps. There are people who are just so into it that just like there's hardcore right-wing people, there's hardcore left-wing people. Now, there's left-wing people that are arguing, we had to set this up in New York so the Republicans would lose a seat, so that would help us in the House. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
But fortunately, this judge had courage and this assembly people had courage and said, we can't worry about that. We have to worry about that these are intelligently done across the state and they're fair and they're just. Now, it's probably better for the Republicans that it was done this way? Yes. Is it going to cause some incumbent Democrats to lose a seat in this situation? Yes. But it's better overall for the state. I want to be able to – look, there are people who think in Yonkers – that they're the minority in the town, in the city, that they rule things like stay there, but it's a minority majority city. I believe in majority rules. I believe that it's a good thing when people are able to elect things citywide, and I think this will be a good thing in New York.
That's where I don't really quite understand it. I'm not suggesting that you're wrong. It just seems to me like I know Yonkers is not one type of demeanor. It's not the same political position. We have six districts represented by six different city council people, and all part of the same city, and yet they each have a different demeanor. They have a different perspective because of social standing, of color, of capacity, education-wise, and it seems to have evolved that way. And in a sense, we're really six different separate little cities because you go from one district to the next, and it's completely different. And it's hard to imagine that you could represent it all. I guess that falls on the shoulders of the mayor, so that's his problem. But the districts are not necessarily, aligned with one another. There is a big difference between District 6 and District 1 and District 3 and District 4. It's unbelievable, the differences.
Yes.
And they don't even have the same demeanor. They don't have the same much of anything. They seem to be disconnected. It's amazing. Sometimes they all vote on the same thing
in
agreement.
In my district, District 1, or even for the legislative district here, it's very confusing. The neighborhood is chopped up every which way but loose. So you get people like Chris Johnson who wins with like hundreds of votes only, you understand, to be a county legislator.
Yes.
Or even with Sinead snakes around, if you can just get to the right people, the right places, and the party can deliver on that. I think these districts should be, even in Yonkers, a little more thought out, a little more easy to understand. Like I said, Tasha's district, uh-huh. I believe, what's his name, Mr. Sabatino had before, you know, going from Ludlow up
yes.
to up to North Broadway, cutting right down to, like a little, I don't know, like a river going through Yonkers. It's just not, it's not right. It's not just. Over time, I hope they would change those
things. That started with Dennis Robertson.
You mentioned that. I went up to learn that history.
It was a weird one. Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't like weird
Crazy.
Districts. I like districts that make sense, and I don't mind a few neighborhoods being clumped together. Maybe they'll have some competing issues, and it'll have to be hashed out locally, but I don't like these ideas of these things that are shaped like some dragon in the sky or some kind of cloud formation or something or some river. You know,
well,
I
listen,
like districts
Brian,
that are square.
Let me stop you there for 1 second because it looks like there's a caller that's coming
sure.
in. Let's bring in the caller. Find out their first name. Hello? Okay, are you listening? Or maybe it's just music they want to play. So we're going to disconnect them, or rather we'll let them listen in. Hello? Okay, they disconnected, so no problem. Okay, so somehow or another we're gonna learn a great deal with this election. It's gonna be very interesting to see who does get elected. I'm
yeah.
afraid that we're going to
I think
undermine some very credible.
He's probably the underdog either way he goes. If he runs against Jamal Bowman, it's progressive against progressive, and Jamal Bowman has a very strong progressive base in Mount Vernon, the Bronx, and even parts of Yonkers. If he goes up north against Sean, he's going to have a problem there. That person's more moderate, and it's a more conservative area, and he lives in that area. He's got a base there. Mm. So Mahdir may lose either way he goes, and since he does lose, then we're going to lose probably. It'll be a Republican seat up north. It'll probably shift the House in Washington D.C. And it's going to have repercussions. But overall, it's a good thing, in my opinion. It might not be the outcome.
It's going to be very interesting.
Right now,
I somehow feel
better.
That in that particular race, I'm just concerned that. We're throwing two progressive black men who have won their positions, and I wonder if we're redesigning with Republican input, even though it was validated by a Democratic judge. Was it Janet DeFiore? I still question whether what we're doing here. And if it's going to work, I think that we're undermining people with a particular perspective, and one is not as left or than the other. But it seems that they represent different communities, and I don't think one can eclipse the other very well. And that's where I find. That the districts are not drawn up well because there are differences between the districts. So having Bowman against Mondaire Jones, I find offensive because I don't get it. Maybe that's my problem. I just don't seem to get it. But to me, it's indicative of the anomaly that they've created under the guise of something credible by the court. And I don't even know if the court can validate what it's doing, and I wonder if we're going to be able to come out of it after the elections are done, and what that's going to do to societal cohesiveness, because I think that's the thing that we're missing. We have a lack of cohesiveness in our society, and we're not bringing it together. And somehow or another, I felt that Mondaire Jones was not as divisive. He may have been a black man, but he didn't come off as being very, very, the term is racist, and they use that against Bowman. I don't know if he is or he isn't, because I don't really follow him all that much. I don't find that he's responsive on many issues. So, you know, there's just no point in begging people for an answer when they decide not to give it to you.
Yeah.
So I'm very very torn apart by where this is going to go.
Oh, I would
I'm
say
afraid
this,
of the outcome.
A Democrat in Yonkers is very different than a Democrat, say, in
the Bronx
or a Democrat even in Scarsdale. You know,
yeah.
A Democrat in Scarsdale is very different than a Jewish Democrat in Scarsdale is very much more liberal than, say, a Jewish Democrat in Rye Brook. But there are differences within these two parties that people like to align themselves with. Even in Yonkers, you've seen
uh-huh.
a lot of people from the Republican Party become Democrats. So Yonkers could be viewed as a little more conservative than, say, Mount Vernon or Rye Brook. So Mayor Jones might be a little more favored in parts of Yonkers as opposed to Jamal Bowman. But Bowman has a very strong base, making with some of the things he's pushing for that are much more progressive. And I think it would be tough for Mayor Jones to take him on. Up north, it's even more conservative, and Sean Patrick Maloney is a little more moderate or of the Democrat, and so he has a tough problem with that there. I remember one time there was I was in Rye Brook at an event. I don't like going to events, but sometimes I just can't get out of it. So
uh-huh.
I was with a person there, and they were going on and on and on that they were all upset that Mayor Jones wasn't I guess getting the Afghans, bringing Afghans here and talking about relocating them here into West, which I'm up for. I think they should. So he says he's not saying nothing. He should be getting these people in Westchester County. And I said, I told the guy, I agree. And the guy lives right next to the Doral Arrowwood. It's an empty resort, a huge empty golf resort. I said, Mayor Jones should bring these Afghans right here. And you also have Rye Town Hilton right down the street. We could bring 1,000 Afghans right here now, maybe 300 families, and put them right here in these two places, and we'd be able to
uh-huh.
help people here. Oh, no. He doesn't want that. He would like to see them come Yonkers, Mount Vernon, wherever else, but he doesn't want them in his backyard. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
And his
yeah.
argument against Mayor Jones was more of, I don't like Mayor Jones, so I'm going to use this issue to attack him, even though I would never want these people to be living next door to me. You understand what I'm saying? Which
mm-hmm.
everybody's
I do.
Got that little hypocritical thing. So now the guy, as much as he was blasting Mayor Jones, he may end up with Jamal Bowman as his congressman, you know what I'm saying? Or maybe
uh-huh.
Mayor Jones will be able to take down Jamal Bowman, or maybe Mayor Jones will go up and beat Sean Patrick Maloney, or maybe the Democrats will convince Sean Patrick Maloney to go more upstate, let Mayor Jones be there, and let Jamal Bowman be here. I don't know what's going to come up, but I have a feeling that
I don't know
either. Mayor Jones hits the road, is what it looks like to me right now.
I think I think you're right. I think Mayor Jones is not going to make it. I think that the more progressive conduct and expression is going to come out of Bowman. The thing that I find offensive about it all, and that's not necessarily the party line, but rather the parties don't fully explain their positions, and a lot of it is just words with no action and nothing to validate them. Just nice talk, great language, doesn't express anything. It's nebulous at best, and progressive ideas, they sound good, but what's the result of all this progressiveness? Can you define it? I can't define it.
Well, there's good and bad in everything. You know, not every progressive idea is
oh,
the best thing.
It's not a question of good and bad. Where is the progressive? Show me the progressiveness.
I would say
where is it?
Some progressive issues that have been very successful and very helpful, even though it wasn't done entirely properly, was that we got more people covered by insurance, health insurance, and we're becoming more of a healthy society. I would say there are progressive programs that are making a difference in our society. There are some conservative or moderate programs that are also good that benefit our society. On a lot of fiscal issues, I would tend to be more moderate or more conservative. On a lot of social issues, I would tend to be more progressive. And
I'm not trying to get your political perspective. It doesn't matter what side of the equation you're on, one way or the other.
Well, I would say on
what has an Ocasio-Cortez done that validates her being so progressive, but she hasn't been able to pass any legislation other than talk.
Well, she's a little bit of a, I would say her.
But she's no different. She's not an aberration. She's another talker without validation. And that's I mean, how long can you live on just words
sometimes
that are meaningless because they're not expressed in reality?
Sometimes, Desi, you have to have some progressive voices, maybe out in the wilderness, pushing for certain programs that don't seem popular at the time. And I guess
but
she would,
what?
And her supporters, like say, I would disagree. Her supporters might argue that she's been beneficial in bringing some of these issues forward. Now, like
what?
Maybe Medicaid for All would probably be a much better program.
Do we have Medicaid for All? Do we have
no.
Medicaid for All?
No, we have.
Okay.
We have
all right, but it's a great idea.
Of,
I'm not questioning
these,
the idea.
That we, as part of the
I'm
compromise
not questioning
with
the idea. It's not the idea. The point is you promise people something and you can validate it, but it doesn't work on just because it's valid. Like what you think and what I think may be very valid, but we have to convince everybody else because it's not just up to you and I to decide what we're going to do, and therefore it's going to be, it's going to be done. You know, we don't have the Queen of England that says, this is the way I want it, and everyone's going to say, oh, great, the Queen of England said so, we're going to do it.
I would probably argue it this way. You have Bernie Sanders up in Vermont. Does he get much legislation passed? Is he able to do things?
No.
No, he's in the Democratic Party, able to do something. But he represents values from that area. They keep reelecting him. That's what they would like to see come forward. And some of his ideas are quite good.
But
some
that's good in New Hampshire. It's not working in New York. So that's the point, isn't it? Can a Sanders represent New York City or New York State? I don't know.
I would say some communities in some areas, maybe in the Bronx, feel like they're not being heard, that these ideas should be pushed forward. And sometimes ideas have to be pushed forward for a decade before they start to get traction and start to bring
changes. Well, is that the responsibility of Ms. Biagi? If she's being if she represents parts of the Bronx, then I guess she'll get reelected.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. She's in the state senate, so she probably will. She's very strong in the has a very good machine in that area. So her prospects of being reelected statewide are good, but her congressional dreams kind of went down the toilet with this redrawn maps. But she'd have to go against Jamal Bowman and Madeir Jones. So she wanted to be a congresswoman.
Well, that's where I still and mentally, cerebrally, I can't quite grasp what we've accomplished because I see Biagi has some relevance in the district. So does Bowman. So does Mondaire Jones. They're different. They have predominantly progressive ideas and concepts. Mm-hmm. And I think if we give them enough time, they can develop them better. But you can develop concepts better when we see these people in power. And then we see how they take their concepts and make it appropriate for more than just a small segment of society, but the entire society, or predominantly a larger society. So this way, you're basically building a concept and making it real and showing people how it really does work. And that's a very difficult thing to do, but it also takes time. And that's the problem, because America is incremental. It's not like, they pass a law and overnight, boom, there you are. And that's part of the incrementalism of the American Constitution and also our state constitution. So this is the evolution of America. That's how we were created. So very, very interesting. Well, I'm Well, I really appreciate our conversation because I think I've learned a great deal, even though I'm still in the woods. I haven't figured it out yet.
It'll roll out more over time, but it was done very rapidly. The whole process has been in Manhattan trying to include the assembly seats like Nader's in this, but I don't think it's going to go anywhere.
Yeah.
But those districts seem to be very fair. It was more the Senate and the congressional districts, but but it wasn't easy for anyone to follow because they had a commission. The commission couldn't do nothing. They had the assembly. Assembly, voted up, down, right there. Then they had a lawsuit with a judge, and they made it partisan because he's Republican. Went to the appellate court. Even brought Janet DeForey in with this appellate court, but it was three judges that decided. Then it was then it was sent over to some guy in Pennsylvania. He's got to send it out now at the last minute. And then you've got to have all these people go collect signatures for a couple of weeks and then run again. So, and there's going to be two primaries. So it's very easy for someone to go, what the hell is going on here, or to understand part of it or not understand it. And trust me, my understanding is far from perfect. I probably, in this conversation, I might have got two or three, four things wrong, too, because it's been chaos. But
well,
I still say overall it's a good thing going forward.
Well, that was the question. I really didn't fully understand how you validated it because I don't know if we have a balance where we take into consideration all sides. And I think it's very hard to measure all sides and to bring them into the forefront and say, well, we gave a little bit of this to this part of the society and this a little bit of this to this part of society, and this is how we melded it all together, and this is where we are. It may not be perfect, but it's more perfect than it was. Or it's we're moving toward greater perfection than we had before, and I find offensive, the absolutism of what we had before was something we swore by. Now we have something completely different, which I don't fully comprehend, and that's supposed to be the new panacea, and it's guaranteed, in my mind, based on the frailty of the human intellect, including my own, that we're going to have a change, maybe in another 5 years or 10 years, if I live that long, to be able to see where we're going to go next. That's my problem. Maybe that's my own personal problem, and you don't have that issue. I just want to understand it, and I don't fully comprehend it.
It could have been handled in a better way. Let me put it that way. It would have been nice if this if New York State, when they set up this commission, it would have been really independent. But instead of like we're going to pick four Republicans and four Democrats, it was bound to fail. And then, if they could have just did, let's get some academics who have no dog in this fight and put them in a room and come up with what's fair, that would have been much better.
Well, you know what it is, Brian? At the end, it looks like this was a discussion that was very internal. It didn't matter what party you belonged to. It was all under a smoke screen, and all of a sudden, boom, there it was. We were told we had lost a position because of population change, and everything got reshuffled, and nobody knew where it was going, and then the past was no good. Now all of a sudden we're going to institute something new. It was supposed to be much more fair than it was before, which could be logical, and yet it happened.
And
I don't think there was very much public input, was there?
Even more crazy than that is, I'm sure it's happened sometime in our history, where they've redone these districts. But I cannot ever recall and I follow the news locally, regionally, and even nationally, recall where an incumbent put head-to-head with another incumbent or having an incumbent having to choose, do I want to go against this incumbent or that incumbent? But Westchester and Putnam and all these in Rockland were so gerrymandered, so twisted around over decade after decade after decade after decade after playing with this, that it just made a crazy soup when it was actually put the way it should be. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And so now, I'm sure it's happened, but can you ever recall where I'm an incumbent congressman and all of a sudden I'm running against another incumbent congressman in my district?
Never. So, I don't remember so that at all.
And actually, the stakes are so great. Who knows? Mud Air may get so much cash that he beats Jamal Bowman, because there are people in the Republican Party that would like to see less of AOC and Jamal Bowman. And who knows? Or if he goes against Sean Patrick Maloney.
Maybe a lot of,
Who knows what could happen up there, because the Democrats may lose that one seat majority. I think it's tied right now.
But,
so they may lose that,
and it'll be a Republican majority. You've honed in, though, on something that might be a credible outcome of this realignment. So when you have a Mondaire Jones who's a progressive in one sense, you got a Bowman who's a progressive in another sense, and you got Maloney as well. The bottom line is that there are degrees to their progressiveness, and there are degrees to their demeanor that are acceptable or not acceptable for some and not for others. So I guess at the end it does become a personal race, isn't it? It's going to be Bowman, it's going to be Maloney, it's going to be Mondaire Jones. That's what we're fighting for, in a sense, isn't it? Because these people are defined. We know them a little bit. Maybe we don't know them personally, but we know them to some extent by their political perspectives. And some made bigger noise than the other. So I guess it will be interesting to decipher what will happen after the next election. This is going to really be a mind-blowing experience to see what the effects are of this ruling will be.
For you and
I really wonder where we're going to go.
A lot of news and commentary about it. Chaos is good for the news business. So
we'll have our Thursdays to discuss it.
Yes. I'm going to let you go. I know you've got to hit the Ukraine. It's you've got a lot of interesting stuff there with the Ukraine. You know, Russia's learning the hard fact that it's easy to take ground. It's not so easy to hold it, especially if people don't like you so much. You know, even the United States has found it out a few times.
Even if you bomb these communities and cities and neighborhoods to smithereens, it's absolutely amazing the anger that was expressed by Putin in his destruction of Ukraine. Unbelievable.
You know, the Putin has been like the best salesman for NATO membership that I've ever seen. I've seen even Switzerland now saying we're going to do joint exercises with NATO. What is it, Finland and Sweden? We want to join NATO.
Yes,
you got all these Estonia and all these other little countries that are worried about being overrun, wanting to join NATO.
Mm-hmm.
He's become the super salesman for NATO. And now I hear that the rebels supposedly in the northwest have actually reached the Russian border. They took back enough territory to get right at the Russian border. They took that territory back.
Yes, they are.
And
Correct.
Putin did all this, but he became the best salesman of NATO, and all he had to do was lose a third of his army. You know what I'm saying? It's the most.
Yep.
This may be the end of Putin, because in the world, who's on Russia's side? Who is on Russia's side now? I mean, international reputation for Russia is just down in the toilet.
The only one that's on Russia's side is Turkey, who would like to not see Finland and Sweden become part of NATO. And it seems that all of the countries in Europe, including Turkey, have to approve the accepting Finland and Sweden into the NATO alliance. But can you imagine, it's over 200 years that Sweden has been, you know, not aligned with anybody, and they've never been militaristic, and now things have changed because they're scared that they might be overrun by the Russians.
It's absolutely amazing. If you're sitting in Sweden, you know, and and you're watching TV and you see these little communities being blasted in the Ukraine. Wow, that looks a lot like my town. You know, Kiev looks a lot like And it just, I think it's just scaring the heck out of Europe. It's like I said, he's gotten the whole world against him. He's strengthened NATO, and all he had to do was lose a third of his army to do it. And he may lose, there may be, who knows, a coup waiting for him after all this disaster. What is this, 80-some days that this invasion?
Say that again. I didn't hear the question.
I think it's 80-some days that this has been going on. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yes.
And it couldn't take this country to size of Texas. You know,
absolutely.
You know, the light should have been out in Kiev like within the first week, and he couldn't do it. You know, he's being pushed back.
Couldn't do it. Yeah. Not at all.
Yeah.
Well, goes to show you that if people believe in their country, as the Ukrainians do, they want their independence. It's their land. It's their language. They speak both Russian and Ukrainian. They're similar language-wise. Even Polish, for example, is not that far removed from Ukrainian and Russian. All of that together, it's a very compelling, compelling story. It is, you know, Zelensky will probably, it's amazing, a comedian on television who claimed he would be the president of a country, and it turned out that he became the president of a country. And
you should have heard the smart remarks
over the
I made when he did become president, you know, like, what is this they're doing? But, you know, it's the best thing that ever happened to him to get this guy.
It's amazing, amazing.
Yes. I would have never predicted this
I don't
in
know where...
100 years, but that's what makes it a good news story.
Absolutely. Well, anyway, thank you so much, as always. What a pleasure. Thank you for making the time. Great subject that you picked today. I'm sorry that I was befuddled because I was totally confused by it, but I think I've learned a little bit more since we've spoken. Hopefully,
right.
I'll be
able
to remember.
Me too. Anyway, have a good day, my friend. Bye-bye.
You too, sir. All the best. Thank you, Brian Harrod. He's the publisher and editor of Yonkers Newswire. And give it a shot. It's real easy. You could just simply look up Yonkers Newswire, and you'll get the link. It's really very, very simple. And if you go to our website, you'll also see the link there. So very, very simple to get to. And a lot of people read it, of course. A very credible publication. All right, let's move on to some other things. Bear with me a second here as I move into... one second. All right, I think here we are. Wanted to get over to a little bit of stuff of what's going on in... one second here. Where is it? One moment here. This is very interesting. We spoke to you about this yesterday. The Russian soldier who was on trial for war crimes in Kyiv, who admitted killing a civilian, has asked the man's widow for forgiveness, quote unquote. And he was the first soldier to face a trial for killing a civilian. And the Ukrainian president, Zelensky, has warned of a long war. So this is going to take a really long time. Evidently, Stoltenberg expects a quick admission of Finland and Sweden despite Turkey's request that they not be allowed. It seems the NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg believes that Sweden and Finland will quickly be accepted into the military alliance despite Turkey's temporary veto. I'm confident that we will come to a quick decision to welcome Finland and Sweden into the NATO family, Stoltenberg said on Thursday at a joint press conference with Denmark's Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen in Copenhagen. But the NATO chief also stressed that, quote, the security interests and concerns of all allies must be taken into account, end quote. Even if Turkey continues to block Sweden's admission, there will be no separate procedure for Finland. Stoltenberg said that Sweden and Finland have applied together. We are treating this as a collective procedure. And Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan reiterated Ankara's stance against allowing the two Nordic countries to join the NATO alliance in a video today. Well, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson spoke to Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky On Thursday, that's today, the leaders discussed a range of issues, including military support and global food security, the prime minister's office had said. Zelensky provided an update on the situation in the Donbas, while Johnson stressed his admiration for the brave defenders of Mariupol and urged Russia to treat any prisoners of war with dignity and respect, noting the recent announcement of an additional one and a half, it's like about $1.75 billion in UK military aid to Ukraine. Johnson said out the support flowing to Ukraine's defense, including long-range artillery, shorter ship missiles, and unmanned drones. So Johnson also raised his concerns about the growing global fallout from Russia's illegal invasion and blockade of Ukraine's Black Sea port, including rising food prices in developing countries. And according to Zelensky's tweet, the leaders discussed ways to export agricultural products from Ukraine and import fuel to Ukraine. The German finance minister, Christian Lindner, announced an additional 1 billion euros, that's about $1.25 billion, for Ukraine's budget during the G7 summit being held near the German city of Bonn on Thursday. The money will come out of Germany's 2022 budget rather than from loans. It aims to support Kyiv's finances hit by the war. And other G7 states have also pledged support. And we have to secure the liquidity of the Ukrainian state, Lindner said at the summit. And look at this. McDonald's has found a buyer for its 850 restaurants in Russia. Days after announcing that it was selling all of its restaurants in Russia following the invasion of Ukraine, McDonald's said today that it had found a local buyer. 3 decades after the famous Golden Arches first appeared in Moscow, a sign of the Soviet Union's opening up to the West, the fast food chain is exiting entirely from Russia. The company said that Alexander Govel, the owner of 25 restaurants in Siberia, has agreed to purchase all the company's restaurants with a view to operating them under a different name. And Govel agreed to keep on all 62,000 employees of the chain for at least 2 years. Well, also, we told you about the Ukrainian soldier who's asked forgiveness from the man whom he's killed, the wife of the man who he killed. And Turkey is still determined to block Sweden and Finland. And it seems that the Recep Tayyip Erdogan, the Turkish president, he's threatened to block the bid over what he considers support by the Finns and the Swedes for Kurdish groups branded as terrorists by the Turkish government. So he picked out Sweden specifically, calling it a terror focus, a complete terror haven. We will continue this policy in a determined fashion, and we told relevant parties that we will say no to Finland and Sweden joining NATO, Erdogan said. Nevertheless, the United States has expressed its confidence that Turkey's objections can be overcome and that the two Nordic states will soon be part of the alliance. So Turkey blocked the beginning of talks on Wednesday, hours after Sweden and Finland handed in their joint bids, and the two formerly neutral countries changed course following Russia's invasion of Ukraine. So it's going to be very, very interesting. Now, the European Parliament is also urging sanctions against a former German chancellor by the name of Gerhard Schröder because of his business and political ties to Russia. The European Union legislature passed a resolution today that said that sanctions following the invasion of Ukraine should be extended, quote, to the European members of the boards of major Russian companies and to politicians who continue to receive Russian money. Schröder, who was chancellor from 1998 to 2005 before working for the pipeline company Nord Stream and Russia's Gazprom, has been under fire in Germany for his ties to Russian firms and President Vladimir Putin. The European Union Parliament's call for sanctions follows a decision by Berlin to cut back Schröder's special rights as an ex-chancellor. And that decision was taken by Germany's ruling coalition led by the Social Democrats, the party to which Schröder himself belongs. Well, Kyiv bemoans second-class treatment by some European capitals, and Ukraine's foreign minister has criticized the second-class treatment of Kyiv by some European Union countries. The comments came after Germany said that the country's bid to join the bloc cannot be accelerated. Strategic ambiguity by Ukraine's European perspective practiced by some European Union capitals in the past years has failed and must end, Ukraine Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba had tweeted. He added that this had, quote, only emboldened, end quote, Russian President Vladimir Putin, and such treatment, Kuleba said, had hurt feelings of Ukrainians. Earlier on Thursday, German Chancellor Olaf Scholz said that there could be, quote, no shortcuts, end quote, to Ukraine's European Union membership. He said this would be unfair to the Western Balkan countries also seeking membership. Well, it seems that the German Air Force flies out wounded Ukrainians. The German military has conducted another air evacuation of war-wounded Ukrainians from Poland to Germany for medical treatment. A special Airbus 310 medevac aircraft took off from Cologne, Germany on Thursday, the German Air Force announced on Twitter. And so far, the Air Force has flown out 111 patients via this route aboard the specially equipped plane that allows them to be treated in the air by medical personnel. This time, the Air Force said the patients were to be flown to Hamburg. Well, Red Cross registering the and tracking Azovstal's prisoners of war. The International Committee of the Red Cross, the ICRC, says it has registered hundreds of prisoners of war, POWs, from the Azovstal steel plant in Mariupol. The besieged metalworks were the last bastion of resistance in the port city, and Russia says some 1,730 fighters have surrendered since Monday. The ICRC says it started registering Ukrainian POWs, which included wounded fighters, on Tuesday under an agreement between Russia and Ukraine. As part of the process, the ICRC records information from the individuals to keep track of those who have been captured. The organization said it was not transporting the POWs to the places where they were being held. And the Russians have taken at least some of the captured soldiers to a former penal colony and territory controlled by Moscow-backed separatists. Russia said on Thursday that 771 fighters holed up at the steelworks had surrendered to its forces in the past 24 hours. Kyiv says it has ordered the soldiers of the Mariupol garrison to stand down. Well, Scholz tells the Bundestag of European Union solidarity is crucial. The German Chancellor, Olaf Scholz, has delivered a statement to the German parliament ahead of a special European Union summit on the war in Ukraine, and Scholz has faced criticism over his approach to the conflict, derided by critics as weak. And Scholz called the war in Ukraine the greatest crisis facing the European Union in its history and a, quote, turning point in history, end quote, but said that European solidarity was the counterweight to autocracy in Russia, in Russian leader Vladimir Putin's Russia, and the greater the pressure from the outside, the more we join forces as the European Union and act together. In his address, Scholz and Putin only said that Putin would only be prepared to discuss peace when he realized that Russia could not break Ukraine's defenses. Quote, peace is only something we can take for granted if we are prepared to defend it. And this is a lesson that we have learned from the brutal Russian attack on Ukraine. The extraordinary European Union summit on May 30 and May 31st is expected to focus on the war in Ukraine and its consequences and possible topics for heads of state and government who are to meet in Brussels are a planned oil embargo against Russia and the European Union Commission's longer-term plan to wean the bloc off Russian fossil fuels. And they could also discuss the prospect of Ukraine joining the European Union, although a decision on the country's candidate status is to be made in June at the earliest. Well, Ukraine says that Russian attacks have stayed focused or stay focused on Donbas. Ukraine's general staff says that Russia's attacks targeting new territory in the Donbas have been without major success, and that, in some cases, Russian soldiers have suffered setbacks. In a report on Thursday, Ukrainian officials said that Moscow-backed forces had, quote, suffered significant losses, end quote, around the settlement of Velika Komishuvaiha in the north of the Donetsk region. The general staff also said that despite heavy fighting in the Luhansk region, including ground offensives supported by Russian aircraft, Moscow had failed to gain much ground. Late on Wednesday, the Ukrainian army announced that it had made further territorial gains in the Kharkiv region. It said Ukrainian forces had regained control of the village of Dementivka near the Russian border in an advance to the north of Kharkiv, which is Ukraine's second city. Well, finance ministers from the G7 nations are gathering in Königswinter in western Germany to coordinate a response to assist Ukraine. U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has asked other G7 nations to join us in increasing their financial support. And German Finance Minister Christian Lindner told German newspaper Die Welt, which is the World, before the meeting that the G7 had to, quote, assure Ukraine's solvency within the next days, few weeks, end quote. Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida told reporters in Tokyo that Japan planned to double its fiscal support for Ukraine to $600 million. The U.S. Senate confirms Bridget Brink as ambassador to Ukraine. Bridget Brink was confirmed by the United States Senate to be the ambassador to Ukraine late Wednesday. The post had been vacant for 3 years. Career diplomat Brink was previously the U.S. envoy to Slovakia and previously had roles including as an expert in Eastern Europe and the Caucasus for the State Department in Washington. She was also deputy ambassador to Uzbekistan and Georgia. Well, the vote to confirm Brink was unanimous. The U.S. State Department had previously announced it was reopening its Kyiv embassy, which had been closed due to Russia's invasion. U.S. diplomats were relocated to Poland, and some were temporarily in Lviv in western Ukraine. Zelensky says the war will be long. It seems that Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky sought to prepare the Ukrainian public for a long war in their country during his nightly video address late Wednesday. He told the Ukrainian people, quote, Kherson, Melitopol, Berdyansk, Enel Hoda, Mariupol, and all our cities and towns that are under occupation, under temporary occupation, should know that Ukraine will return. End quote. He said, however, that battlefield conditions would determine how long it takes for the territory to be back under Ukrainian control. We're trying to do it as soon as possible. We are committed to driving out the occupiers and guaranteeing Ukraine real security, Zelensky said from Kyiv. Ukraine extended martial law and the mass mobilization by 90 days until August 23rd. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said Russia fired more than 2,000 missiles at his country since February 24 when Russia invaded Ukraine. And during his nightly video address, Zelensky said most of the missiles had hit civilian infrastructure without bringing about any strategic advantage. And Russian missiles struck the southern city of Mykolaiv and Dnipro in the last days, Zelensky said. So what happened in Russia's war on Ukraine on Wednesday? It seems that the Russian Foreign Ministry said it is expelling scores of diplomats from several European countries in a retaliatory move to their expulsions of Russian diplomatic personnel. Those expelled include 34 French, 27 Spanish, and 24 Italian diplomats. Russia also withdrew the visas and press credentials of Canada's Canadian Broadcasting Corporation and Radio Canada's journalists and is shutting the organization's Moscow bureau. Well, Germany will donate 15 tanks to the Czech Armed Forces as part of a program under which Berlin aimed to help countries pass their stocks of Soviet weaponry to Ukraine. The Czechs have given Ukraine Soviet-era heavy weapons worth at least $130 million and are in talks with Germany about purchasing up to 50 more new Leopard A7 Plus tanks. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen has proposed extra aid to Ukraine this year of up to 9 billion euros. That's $9.5 billion. She said the fund would help the country cope with the ravages of war. European Union also intends to mobilize up to 300 billion euros to about $325 billion of investment by 2030 to end the bloc's reliance on Russian oil and gas. The investments will include 10 billion euros, it's about $11 billion for gas infrastructure, 2 billion euros for oil, and the rest for clean energy, von der Leyen told reporters. And U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said sanctions against Russia had an enormous impact, but Russia said its economy was showing resilience. Russian Economy Minister Maxim Reshetnikov, though, was confident that inflation in Russia would slow down further, adding that Russia had withstood the first hit from sanctions. The U.S. also set up a new monitoring body to build legal cases against Russia for crimes committed during its war against Ukraine and reopened its embassy in Ukraine's capital of Kyiv. In February, the embassy was closed and diplomatic personnel temporarily relocated to Lviv in western Ukraine. Many Western countries, including Germany, France, and the United Kingdom, have reopened their embassies in Kyiv over the past month after Russian troops pulled back from the city to focus on an offensive in the east of the country. As a result of unease due to Russia's war in Ukraine, Finland and Sweden submitted applications to join NATO. Though Turkey moves to block the start of their NATO accession talks while making a series of military and political demands. And U.S. President Joe Biden said he expects Finland and Sweden will join NATO despite Turkey's objections, which will be overridden in time. And Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said that the bid for the two Nordic nations to join the alliance would make probably not much difference. Well, all of a sudden it makes no difference, before it made a big difference. Well, United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres said it was in intense contact with Russia, Ukraine, Turkey, the United States, and European Union to try and restore Ukrainian grain shipments and revive Russian fertilizer exports. So that has been, a major problem. Now, let me just quickly look. Bear with me one more second. I think that we've covered most of it, to be honest with you. Quickly see if I've got anything else that we could share with you today. And then there's always tomorrow, of course. Oh, yeah, this we should tell you about. The security of Asia is in focus as Biden visits South Korea and Japan. U.S. President Joe Biden's aiming to boost ties with East Asian allies to face down a nuclear-armed North Korea and an increasingly expansionist China. It seems that U.S. President Joe Biden is scheduled to arrive in Seoul on Friday for talks with South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol. Although administration officials admit they are concerned, North Korea will attempt to overshadow the visit with a test launch of an intercontinental ballistic missile or even an underground nuclear test. Biden is expected to discuss the security situation in Northeast Asia during a three-day visit, as well as ways to potentially engage with North Korea, the growing challenges posed by an increasingly expansionist China, and a new regional economic agreement. Well, the U.S. leader is due to travel on to Tokyo on Sunday for bilateral discussions with Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida and a summit of the leaders of the Quadrilateral Security Dialogue, or Quad, which brings together Japan, the United States, Australia, and India. North Korea's continued pursuit of weapons of mass destruction will likely dominate discussions in both capitals. anticipated missile test. Well, it seems addressing a press conference in Washington on Wednesday, U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan said that North Korea is likely to carry out a long-range missile test on what would be its seventh nuclear test at any time in the next few days. We are preparing for all contingencies, including the possibility that such a provocation would occur while we are in Korea or Japan, Sullivan had said. Well, North Korea has already launched 16 missiles so far this year, many in the run-up to South Korea's general election in March. Analysts have said the regime of Kim Jong-un sought to intimidate the incoming South Korean president and wants to remain at the forefront of the U.S. president's thinking. Regional security is going to be the main issue when Biden and Yoon meet, said An Yin-hai, a professor of international relations at Korea University in Seoul. Quote, there are concerns about the North's nuclear and missile capabilities and would not surprise me at all if they did decide to carry out a test while Biden is in Japan to act as a show of strength. Biden will be very keen to improve cooperation between the United States, South Korea, and Japan. Biden's also expected to seek dialogue with the North, and he will meet former South Korean President Moon Jae-in. And during the early stages of his 5 years in power, Moon built a reasonable working relationship with Kim in Pyongyang, including, quote, brokering two summits for the North Korean leader with then-President Donald Trump. The relationship chilled after the collapse of the February 2019 summit in Hanoi, but Biden apparently hopes that out of office, Moon may be able to resurrect some form of communication with Kim. Another area of discussion between Yoon and Biden will be trade, with the Korean leader expected to announce that his nation will be a founder member of the U.S. proposed Indo-Pacific Economic Framework, an alliance of regional partners designed to strengthen supply chains, improve infrastructure, and support efforts toward clean energy, decarbonization, and fair trade. The pact is widely seen as a parallel effort to regional security alliances designed to limit China's aggressive expansionist moves in the region. Japan is also expected to underline its support for the pact when Biden arrives in Tokyo on Sunday, although Prime Minister Kishida does have some concerns about overlap comprehensive and progressive agreement for Trans-Pacific Partnership, which Tokyo worked hard to develop after Trump withdrew the United States from its predecessor, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, in 2017. Yet Tokyo's primary concern is the same as that of Seoul, security. The main reason for Biden's visit to the region is the Quad meeting in Tokyo, and there have already been reports that the statement at the end of the talks will include a commitment to joint deterrence of China's expansion aims in the region, said James Brown, an associate professor of international relations at the Tokyo campus of Temple University. Well, Russia's war in Ukraine has really served to highlight nations' concerns about China and how authoritarian revisionist powers can take reckless decisions, he said. The fear in Northeast Asia is that Beijing might make an equally reckless attempt to seize Taiwan by force, a conflict that would cause massive loss of life, huge amounts of material damage, and further throw the global economy into turmoil. I'm also expecting the United States to reaffirm its commitment to protect Japan under its nuclear umbrella and calls for ensuring stability in the Taiwan Strait, Brown had added. Well, the Quad members are not on the same page. Discussion in the Quad, however, will not be plain sailing. While the U.S., Japan, and Australia are fully committed to providing assistance to Ukraine and have imposed wide-ranging sanctions on Russia, India has not followed suit. Instead, New Delhi has stepped up purchases of Russian energy, although it is looking to diversify the sources of its weapons imports. India continues to be heavily reliant on Russian military equipment. It does appear that India is not on the same page as the others when it comes to Russia, but I expect the Quad members to paper over the cracks and emphasize their commitment to security in the Asian Pacific region while avoiding future and specific comments on Russia, Brown had said. So those are some of the major, major concerns, which are going to be very interesting. Now, this is last thing that we'll do today. Bear with me a second here. 1 second. Where is it here? Oh, this is interesting. The Romanian port of Constanta takes on Ukraine's crops. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see where all that goes because it's going to be a major, major concern. 1 second here. I don't know if you've heard about this. Monkeypox. I never heard of that before. Portugal reports cases as an outbreak spreads. Seems that Portuguese officials have confirmed 5 cases of the monkeypox disease. The viral infection, rarely found in Europe, has also been reported in Spain and the United Kingdom. Seems that health officials in Portugal on Wednesday said they had confirmed 5 cases of monkeypox in young men. And authorities in the United States state of Massachusetts said that a case had been detected there in a man who had recently traveled to Canada. Another 15 suspected cases in the area around the Portuguese capital of Lisbon were also being investigated, said Portugal's General Directorate for Health. Well, the United Kingdom and Spain have also been looking into suspected cases of the viral infection, marking an unusual outbreak in Europe for a disease typically only found in Africa. So what do we know about monkeypox cases? Well, Portuguese authorities said that all recorded cases mostly involve young men. Officials did not disclose whether they had recently been to African nations or had links with recent cases in the United Kingdom. The UK has so far reported 7 cases since May 7. The people involved in 4 of those cases apparently identified as gay or bisexual, the United Kingdom Health Security Agency has said, suggesting there may be transmission in the community. On Wednesday, Spanish authorities said that they were investigating 23 possible cases, noting that all of them were in young men. There is no scientific evidence suggesting the disease is transmittable through sex. Experts have said the infections could have occurred during the close physical contact involved in sex. So the question is, what is monkeypox? The viral infection is similar to smallpox but milder. Its symptoms include fever and a distinctive bumpy rash that normally starts on the face and then moves to other parts of the body. Most people recover from monkeypox within several weeks. The transmission is typically through close contact with infected animals or people, though the latter is less common. The disease was first recorded in the 1970s in the Congo. The number of monkeypox infections has increased in West Africa in the last decade, however, in a milder strain. Now, the strain found in West Africa has a fatality rate of around 1% of cases. It is reportedly the same strain that has been reported in the United Kingdom. In 1980, smallpox was eradicated by vaccination, and the jab or inoculation has been phased out. But it also protects against monkeypox, and pulling back the vaccination campaigns may have contributed to the spread of monkeypox cases. So this is really quite interesting. It seems that, this is a little bit out of date, so there's no need to go there. Bear with me a second here. 1 second here. One moment here. Let me just see if I have this. Well, I think that we've covered it all. Yep, I think that's where it's at. So let me just say thank you for being with us today. Thanks to Brian Harrod for joining us today. Thanks for explaining all that he did, because there was so much. It's hard to comprehend all these things with reapportionment and redesigning and reconstruction of the different elected offices. We'll have to see where it all goes. We'll see the value of it and so on and so forth. Well, tomorrow's Friday. Let me just quickly check, because I'm not quite sure who we have for tomorrow. Bear with me a second here. Let me look at the calendar. We should be speaking. I'm not quite sure. I have to check. We'll have to see if we're going to be able to speak to Renata Sayers. He's the assembly member representing District 90, which is 85% Yonkers, and that's his only purview. And we'll see where that goes. We'll see if he can be with us. But if he can, that'll be wonderful. And if not, we're still going to be covering more stuff that is going to unravel in Ukraine, as well as other news to keep you abreast of what's happening. So that's our story. Thank you for being with us today. I have an appointment, a doctor's appointment, so I've got to get there. And so I'm leaving a little bit early today. Take care and be well. Goodbye.